Chapter 36. While Priya was swimming across the Great Sound, Kurt and Joe were descending through the open waters of the Atlantic. Forced to avoid the divers who remained near the freighter, they'd swung wide around the ship's bow before descending in the direction of the tanker-laden submersible. Kurt was a few yards ahead, kicking smoothly, allowing the power suit to do most of the work. The submarine was up ahead, running with its high beams on, but slowly getting dimmer with the growing distance. "What's the max range on this sonar?" Kurt asked. "About 400 yards," Joe said, "depending on the water conditions." 400 yards was much farther than one could see with even the brightest of lights. Kurt switched the sonar system back on, dialing up the maximum range. The gray field of vision and the outline of the submersible appeared. It was leveling off and gliding across the top of a reef. "Would you look at that," Joe said. The sonar system gave a three-dimensional appearance to the view, and the ship on the bottom seemed to lengthen as they approached it. The angled bow was pointed toward them. Behind it, three huge dome-shaped structures protruded from the main deck. Each dome was actually the upper half of a spherical container, known as a moss tank. They were designed to hold liquid natural gas under extreme pressure. The lower halves of the spheres were hidden below deck. "That's a liquid natural gas carrier," Kurt said. "Big one, too," Joe replied. "The question is, what's she doing down here?"
"Tessa has a foundation that sinks ships to encourage reef building," Kurt said. "Though I have a feeling this vessel has a more sinister purpose."
"Mothership," Joe suggested, "with this tanker coming in for a fill-up."
"Exactly," Kurt said. "I think we've found the source of infection."
They followed the submarine down, closing the gap as the ungainly vessel navigated cautiously between a field of coral and the side of the ship. It slowed to a stop, pivoted, and, after stirring up a cloud of sediment, disappeared into a gaping hole in the side of the ship's hull.
"That's a surprise," Joe said. "I figured they'd lock on, fill up, and head back to the surface."
"As did I," Kurt said. With the submarine gone, he could see a large section of hull plating moving back into position like a garage door closing. "Let's get through the door before they shut us out." Both men dived hard, swimming toward the rapidly shrinking gap and darting through the cloud of sediment and beneath the closing door. They wound up inside the hull of the monstrous ship, listening to the audible clang of the hull plates shutting behind them. The submersible floated ahead and above them, its lights illuminating the inner sanctum of the LNG carrier. Kurt had been inside similar ships, and one look told him the guts of the vessel had been torn out. Structural supports, machinery, and entire portions of the inner hull had been cut away and removed. What remained was an open space, several hundred feet in length and 140 feet wide, with the lower halves of the spherical tanks hanging in place like the undersides of three great balloons. The submersible with the tanker truck on top was inching upward into a gap cut in the first of the three spheres.
"Now what?" Joe asked.
"What else?" Kurt replied. "We see what's inside the sphere."